happy.
Good morning.
Really happy.
Good morning.
To be with you.
Happy.
Good morning. Welcome everybody to the NFT Morning, the French podcast talking about NFTs and crypto art. We've been doing this the last 3 years every day, and today the episode number 675. And this is John talking. I'm with my dear friend Rémi. Hi Rémi, what's up?
Hello, fine. So happy today.
Yeah, we are excited because we like to use superlatives in the space like legend or something like this, but he's a real legend actually, so we are super, super excited to be with Robert Alice today. Hi. Yeah, thank you for being there, Robert.
I can't believe you've done all these. Crowd me out with applause. Thank you, my God. I can't believe you've done one of these every morning for 3 years.
This exactly. Is
like you're heading for Beeple Everyday's territory.
Exactly. And actually, you know, for the story, we started 1 week before the Beeple auction. And exactly.
Oh my
and
God.
So, yeah. Fun. And I think this is what helped us, you know, to start to have an audience. It was the good timing, I guess.
They're going to get a, you have to sell your data to OpenAI. And it will be a valuable treasure trove of NFT art history, I'm sure.
Ah, that's a nice idea, actually. Yeah, this is, you know, yeah, that's super nice. I think, you know, it would be much more simpler than the plan that we have to ask a researcher or PhD to start working on NFT history. Maybe OpenAI is a simple alternative, actually. So that's super, super cool. No, thank you for being there because, you know, we've been talking about your art, of course, a lot of time at the NFT Morning. Of course, you know, I don't want to go through all the journey because, you know, we have a lot of say and a lot of talk about actualities and, you know, this fashion book that, you know, everybody talking about in the space. And that is, you know, if you didn't see it physically, you know, it's an art piece, you know, just the book is an art piece, you know, that you can have in your home and you can be, you know, it's something like a really something very precious and magnificent. Yeah. Awesome book to have and to see and to discover, and so I think, you know, we have a lot to talk about. But just to come back very, very, very quickly about yourself, let's say, to make it simple, I will just mention maybe three projects very, very quickly. Of course, I would say the one, and actually, you know, one of these pieces has been acquired by the Pompidou Center, I think, the last few weeks. That is basically this massive walk that you created. I think it was like almost 4 years ago, the block project, yeah. Right? Yeah. So, yeah, the block project, you know, where you created this huge physical discs, I don't know how to describe that, you know, these physical pieces. And basically, you know, if you have a look on these pieces, you can see that they are filled with basically some key blocks of the Bitcoin characters, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah, so it's basically, it's a project that launched in 2000, and I started it in 2018, and I basically sat down for 2 years, and I hand transcribed the entire version 0.1.0, so the very first set of code base that Satoshi published. So basically ground zero for Bitcoin, or ground zero for the entire crypto movement. So the very first set of code base for Bitcoin Core. And that is transcribed across 40 paintings and then across 40 corresponding NFTs. And yeah, as you say, John, it was acquired last week by the Pompidou, which is a great news.
How many
pieces? Yeah, 40 works.
Yeah, 40 works, yeah.
And with so 40, it's basically 40 paintings and 40 NFTs, and but they correspond together, so 40 individual works. And that was that came that was launched publicly at auction at Christie's, and so it's a bit of a theme with everything that I do. But I constantly think about not just what to make, but also where it goes and how it functions and what that does for the NFT space. And at the time, you have to remember, I mean, this is 6 months before the Beeple sale. So, you know, this the NFT community was much smaller, the crypto art community was much smaller. And it was the first NFT that was sold. It was the first NFT that was sold at public auction 6 months before the Beeple sale, and was really the kind of catalyst for the Beeple sale that I helped advise on. So it, it has its own small place in the history of really helping NFTs go mainstream. And it's this kind of, I think of it as this perfect kind of crossover project, because it's part physical, part digital. And so an auction house at the time could kind of understand it and get to grips with it. And it led to people doing the first NFT only auction.
That's this is crazy. Yeah, so it was the key, transitional piece.
Exactly.
For auction houses, and I didn't know that you played a role also to advise Christie's also on the sales. But when you say it now, it totally makes sense. Where you see, you know what. Yeah, the understanding you have on both worlds, I would say. And so now this block are really like kind of totally part of history, and you know exactly the, what we mentioned, you know, Christie's sale, Pompidou now. I when I was at NFT Paris, I saw this piece owned by One of One Collection. So it's really like some pieces that, you know, it's kind of life achievement, I would say, for some key collectors of institution to have one of these pieces right now.
Well, exactly. Yeah, it's amazing to see it come full circle. It's part of the Taschen book, and it's exciting.
We have a lot of things to say, and it was a big and huge starting point, and I think the story of this block and is not over at all. It's still going ahead, but you know, second thing, you know, we talked about this project quickly, but I won't go so much. But you've been continuing, you know, your journey with auction houses. Also, I think we remember, you know, we talked about, I think it was 2 years ago, this Alice AI project for that Sotheby's. And then just to going ahead, you know, because a lot of things, and then, you know, you can peek and come back to some point if you want to. We had the chance also to talk with Sébastien, founder of La Collection, about this crazy exhibition at La Monnaie de Paris. And so I had the chance actually to visit it with you, and it was for me another part of history, basically, because Monet de Paris is like, I don't know, it has been created in 17th century or something like this.
No. Far older than that.
Really?
It was created in 864 AD.
800? No way.
It's mad. So it's been around in constant production for a thousand, nearly 1,300 years. It's now a museum and a contemporary art center, and it's well known for putting on some interesting exhibitions in Paris. But you know, if you want to understand from a crypto perspective, if you want to understand how important the relationship between the state and money is, then you have to look no further than the Monnaie de Paris, because, you know, the oldest surviving institution beyond, you know, our, you know, religions have come and gone in this time. Whole world systems of thinking have come and gone in this time. You know, the oldest thing that survives is the system of making money. And so I think when people start to, you know, if you zoom out and you look at crypto in general, you realize just how hard what the crypto movement is trying to re-engineer is, because this is not food delivery services. It's, you know, it's not Amazon. It's not even insurance. It's like you're going up against something that is 1,300 years old and has been in constant production ever since. So it was a very interesting place. You know, they've done these great contemporary art shows, and they wanted to do something in kind of crypto art and NFTs. And it was an amazing place to go and make an exhibition. And it was my first solo museum show. And it was really meaningful. They gave me the whole courtyard, which is this amazing, beautiful courtyard. And there'll be a number of further institutional acquisitions that came out of it. But it was an amazing show with La Collection, which really have driven a lot of institutional engagement for artists and are hugely valuable to the space. Another great moment in my career to date. We'll see. Yeah. What to work with them again.
No, yeah, definitely. And yeah, it's really, but I think also, you know, with these two first points, you know, we can also understand a bit, you know, your universe, you know, creating the link between worlds on one hand, the questioning about what is value, what is money, what are institutions, and all this, you know, what I like really also in what you do, you have the feeling of, I would say, the weight of history, like really like the history with a big H, I would say, and really like something that is, you know, the main are living, but, you know, something stays. And you have really this thing about, you know, what is eternity, what stay forever, whatever happened. I don't know if it's part of your...
It really is. You know, everything that I've done is really an investigation into blockchains and their histories. And all my work, whether it's, you know, and this is where the Taschen book comes in, you know, all my work is really about exploring the histories of blockchains and where they came from. And I think, you know, it provides a counterpoint in a way, because, you know, a lot of the crypto art movement, a lot of the NFT space is all about, you know, a lot of the crypto movement in general is this like thirst for newness and this kind of this looking at the future with a very exciting technology, and then at the same time a kind of rejection of the past. And actually my approach to some extent has been to say, as a counterpoint to everything, you know, to look the other way and to say, no, I'm going to look back into the past and see what links I can find that help us understand where we've come from, and to show more importantly that there are these huge links with the past, and that blockchains are not necessarily this kind of radical rupture with the past, but really a kind of old, you know, an old way of doing new things. And so that's fun. Yeah, it's fundamentally what I'm interested in, kind of blockchains and their histories. And in many ways, like, I don't see the Taschen book is just another art project in that sense. It's just another way of exploring that. They all come full circle. You know, a lot of the projects that I've made have been about collaborating with institutions. So whether it was doing the first NFT at Christie's, or I recently did the first academic conference on NFTs at the University of Oxford, and you know, the Monet de Paris was one of the first kind of major institutional solo shows for an NFT artist. So all these kind of moments that kind of hopefully push the NFT space forward, but you, collaborating with institutions and building bridges between the traditional art world and the NFT space, which I think are really, really important. And then the Taschen book was really a continuation of that, because, you know, like Portraits of a Mind, the block works, you know, they are a series of physical and digital works. And, you know, the Taschen book is this physical book, you know, it's a sort of physical portal into a digital realm. It's like, it's this physical book about digital art. And is also working with one of the top institutions in publishing. So it kind of is the, you know, it's the kind of the latest or the kind of the furthest thing that I've done in terms of all of those kind of all that thinking, the idea of blockchain and history, the idea of working with institutions, the idea of the physical and the digital. It's an encapsulation of all of that.
No, awesome. And so just to summarize, you know, of course, you know, the editorial of this book, the idea was basically it's a selection because it's all the point to kind of follow the curation of 101 artists, basically. Yeah. And and so it's okay, it's a huge book, I think. How many pages? Like
We're so annoying. We want it to be 606, but I think it's 604. I can't remember.
604 pages. This is huge. And you have, you know, you really have to watch at this, yeah, the object of the book, because it's extremely high, especially, you know, you see the art, what is the name, the big edition,
the large edition is called the, well, there are basically, there are two at the moment. There are, we've launched with the two collector's editions, and one is called the hard code edition, and it's a baby sumo book which is encased in a kind of engraved metal case. But the book is, you know, if you think about the biggest book you've ever seen in anyone's head, just think about it and then double it.
This is exactly this. Yeah.
I can't really tell you how big it is until you're there and you see it, but you would need a reinforced coffee table if you wanted to put it on your coffee table. It is a real sculptural object. It is not really a book. It's a sculpture. And so there's that book. It comes in an edition of 600. And then there's a book that comes in a kind of Taschen slip case, which is a kind of a card case, kind of felt clad case. And then that is comes in a much larger edition. But it's really important to recognize that, you know, Taschen's model, what really is great about what Taschen do is that they do these kind of super high-end collector's books, which are these kind of real sculptural objects, which is amazing for, you know, NFT collectors. It's amazing for the validation of the NFT space. You know, Taschen produce only very few of these books. They maybe produce one or two a year. And they've only been doing it for the last 15 years. So, it, you know, it sits within a kind of pantheon of books that is very, very special, and shows how much Taschen are endorsing NFTs. And what that then does, which is really important, is later this year, we will release the trade edition, the standard edition, which is the size of a standard coffee table book. But all the investment that goes into making the large book, and really, there's a huge amount of investment in terms of time, in terms of resource. You know, nothing I wanted, they said no to. And you wouldn't get that if you were just producing a standard coffee table book or a standard art history book. And so all of that then gets, all of that investment from the large book gets put into the small book, and you get this beautiful book at like $30 or $40 that everyone can kind of afford to some extent. And, you know, Taschen, compared to their competitors, they make these very expensive books, but that subsidizes the smaller books. And if you look, compared to their competitors, they're probably $10 or $15 cheaper. And that just means that more people can buy the book when it finally comes out as a standard edition. So it's, you know, it's really important to recognize that business model, because you get the best of both worlds. You know, you get this amazing, sexy sculptural object, you know, if you're a major NFT collector, but also you get this book that gets printed in an edition of 20 or 30,000 as its first edition, and it will get sent to young artists and art historians and art critics and curators around the world. So that's really the scope of the book moving forward.
I see. And so, yeah, to come on the book. So, of course, you know, very, very quickly, but I think it's super crazy story. You've been working, I believe, for a long time on this project. I remember I was contacting you, I think, a year ago already, and you were already working on this?
Yeah, it was about two and a half years.
2.5 years. Wow. Okay,
which this is important. So... You know, it's important to recognize because, I mean, two things. One, you know, if you've been around the crypto space enough, as soon as a kind of crypto winter comes in, everyone says it's time to build, and you never really know what people, if people do that, and so, you know, we I signed the deal at the probably at the peak of the NFT markets in 2020, and 2021, end of 2021, start of 2022.
Yeah.
And then we got to work, and actually it was the perfect project to do over the course of a bear market when everything was quiet. It was very much felt like the first chapter of NFTs had closed, and you could then sit back and tell a real history. There was this real kind of dividing line between that first chapter and what would come next. And you know, I think there's this perception that, you know, everything happens so fast in the NFT space, and there's this constant drive to be, you know, on Twitter timelines and be surfing the algorithm of Twitter with something new. And actually, you know, good things take time. There is one thing no technology can speed up, is that if you want to create anything of real historical value, then it takes an investment of time. And that's just what has happened, you know, in culture over the last 2,000 years. And no bit of GPT 4 or 5 is going to speed that up. And so a lot of the projects that I've done, you know, they will take a year or 2 years to come to fruition, and then they'll be released. And it's a very different way of thinking and working to a lot of the NFT space, and something that I would really, you know, encourage people to take more time with what they do and to focus on much longer, deeper, bigger projects that have real structural value to the NFT space. Because, you know, that is the way that you build really long-term value, is with these projects that take deep time commitments, you know.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I think, you know, I believe it's hard for a lot of people, because when you are on Twitter every day, you see the noise. The noise tell you you should do AI right now, you should do Ordinals right now, you should do Solana, you should do Memecoin. But, you know, many of these trends, in 1 year from now, you know, we won't hear about it anymore. Oh, not so much, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe some of them. And what I tell the artists is, try to do your own stuff. You know, do your own stuff and try to be consistent. Okay, of course, you know, you can play with technologies and whatever happened there. This is all the purpose. But, you know, before that, you know, don't follow. If you try to follow each trend happening, you will just lose yourself.
Yeah.
And so that's super. And so just about to stay on the Tashen book selection, I think it's also something that, you know, was kind of, you know, on one hand, very interesting for most of the space, but many people, of course, started to say, oh, you know, at the moment you're doing a curation and selection, it means also that you are rejecting some other artists in a way. I feel like, you know, somehow. And so I don't know what you would like to say, because, you know, it's already 100 artists that kind of, you know, feel back. They are part of history right now. I believe it was a hard choice, you know, to do this selection.
Yeah, I mean, of course it was, you know. I mean, books are... books are physically bound. You can't have a 10,000-page book. It's limited. I think the first thing to say is that, like, this conception, you know, books are important, right? And since we've been children, we're taught to respect books, and we're taught to respect history, and books are the truth, right? Like, books are the Bible. You know, we read the Bible. The Bible is the word of God. So, you know, you're supposed to be quiet in libraries. You're supposed to really respect books. And so of course, there's this perception that, like, what is in the book is the truth. And, you know, that's not the case. The book is just one small slice of the NFT space. But it was really important for that slice to be as decentralized and democratic as possible. And so we tried really hard to make sure that it was kind of co-curated with the community as much as possible. And so we basically reached out to maybe 20 or 30 artists that we thought would be in any book. And we asked them to suggest three artists that they thought were they most admired, and then three artists that they thought were most overlooked. And that could be for any reason. It could be because of geography. It could have been because of ethnicity. It could have been because of gender. But it also could have been your best friend down the road that you thought was just making really good work and hadn't been seen. And so that list became 180 names. And then we asked those 180 to do the same, and that became 900 names, let's say. And basically, if names, and what would happen is names kept coming up, so people would keep suggesting the same names. And if those names kept coming up, we would just automatically include them in the book. And so, you know, there are people in this book that, you know, whose work I don't like. You know, there are people in this book whose work I had never heard of.
You've been trying to have a kind of a method, more or less, even if you know every method is a complex to define, a method to also include, to not have only your curation but also a part of some of the things that you may have forgotten, and for some reason, you know, they're not really in your scope. And so by asking the crowd, basically having a natural system of curating based on the kind of crowd wisdom, basically.
Yeah, of course, exactly. And for it to be a portrait of a community and what the community values, and very much for it to be like artist-led, you know, we're at a point, there are very few histories that you get to write when, you know, all the artists are around. And that's really nice, you know, so it's been very like artist-led, artist-first. And of course, like, I'm an artist, so that's important to me. You know, it's a portrait. This is a portrait of the NFT space selected by artists, where a kind of lived experience has been prioritized over, you know, some external curator coming in and having a look at the space, which is also valuable, but very different. And so, you know, of course, like, I think Xcopy said it when the book was launching, like, if you're in the book, you like it. If you're not in the book, you don't. But then at the same time, you know, everyone's saying, oh, why do you need a book? Like, you've got the blockchain. And of course, they're completely right, you know, but it's also like, you know, well, what's important? Is the book important then or not important? Like, does it matter or does it not matter? And obviously, it's provoked enough excitement. You know, the post on Tashin has now got 3.6 million views. Like, I don't think there's going to be a post about NFTs on Twitter.
Wow.
This year that has had.
Actually,
that
you know, to be honest, I think they're in competition with Get Rich Nick.
Yeah, God, I hate that guy. I hate that guy. But I think, like, you know, it's important that people understand that, like, the blockchain is always the primary resource, of course, and that books are just a physical abstraction. But it's really, you know, publishing is really important. And so, you know, quite often there's, you know, the blockchain is just an economic ledger, right? It's an economic ledger and it's an archive of the art. But what it doesn't record is all the soft culture that sits around it, all the discussions, all the exhibitions, all the bits of kind of contextual information that make art so rich. And so, you know, and then also, for example, there's all this kind of stuff, like, you know, the Beeple 5000 Everydays was conducted off chain. So in 200 years time, if you wanted to just say, oh, it's all on the blockchain, well, actually, it's not. You know, you wouldn't, if you looked at the blockchain in 200 years' time, you wouldn't actually know that the Beeple work sold for $69 million, because it's not on the blockchain. And so, of course, there's a huge amount of history, but ultimately, like, we can't just reduce our history to some economic ledger of seeing what the floor price for punks was on a certain day, because that diminishes the value of what punks are historically. And so books are a very important way of kind of encapsulating all of that in a method that sits, that has been proven to stay around, you know, with provable permanence. You know, we don't have our music from the Renaissance, but we do have our books and our art. And books have a habit of sticking around in the same way that hopefully blockchains will, but we still don't know that, you know. And so I think they will have long-term importance. And then the other side is that the other, you know, books have this ability to transcend outside of the NFT space. You know, to set up a MetaMask wallet and buy an NFT still is quite daunting for your average person, right? It requires quite a lot of technical knowledge to go and buy some crypto. Like, it's complicated still. It's becoming increasingly easy. You know, this X copy drop on
the fly
on floor, yeah, you know, which sold over a million NFTs for $4 a piece, and you could buy it on Apple Pay, and you could mint it directly to your MetaMask wallet, is, like, I think probably one of the most important moments. You know, the first moment was Pax Merge, which minted 30,000 NFTs in 5 minutes. But still was kind of right at the hype of the start of the NFT boom. But this is, you know, this is the true promise of NFTs, and you're starting to see it happen. But for until this point, you know, it's been quite tricky. So if you're an average, you're a member of the public, if you are an average art collector, traditional art collector, if you are a traditional art historian, if you are someone of any age, you know, if you can read, you are comfortable with books, right? Books are easy for you, right? We've spent our whole lives with them. We're very familiar with them. And so it's a very easy way of engaging in a subject matter that you're unfamiliar with. And these books kind of, they operate in a very different world as a piece of media. You know, books are much slower. You know, everyone who's picked up a book has had that feeling of time slowing down, of sinking into that, of sinking into a book. And yeah, that is, I think, a truly different experience to, as you said, John, like, you know, getting caught up in the noise of Twitter. You know, people can write a 30, you know, a 30 point thread on Twitter, and it can get posted and lost within 20 minutes.
Agreed.
And it doesn't stay around, even though it's like, could be a really interesting bit of criticism or a really interesting take on something. And, but books slow down, you know, they're kind of unavoidably in your physical space, and they allow a whole new public to engage in the space. And that, I think, is really exciting and important.
We can't agree more. I believe Remy will agree also. Actually, we had the chance to write the first French book about NFTs 3 years ago, and you are in this book, actually, Ben.
Oh, nice.
That's, yeah, and so it's, and we realized, even now, you know, 3 years later, we can see, you know, the impact. You know, the impact of the book was, yeah, much more important than a lot of things, you know, we've been doing on the side. And a lot of people discovered, basically, yeah, even, you know, my, you know, we can see at all level, but, you know, when we wrote the book, it was for our family, basically.
Cool.
I really wanted to get my dad to understand what I was doing. And so, yeah, it was, it worked, basically, you know. At the moment you have a book, I think it's important, you know, because what you say, you know, it's, yeah, historical and taking really, like, the time to produce something that deserves time. But it's also, yeah, as you say, you know, the most simple way to be in touch with people who don't know the space. Because, of course, you know, at the moment you're talking about wallet, you're talking about, you know, even internet, digital, cryptocurrency, everything becomes complicated. But when you have a book in your hand, anyone can offer a book. Anyone can get a book. Anyone can read a book. So, yeah, you know, it's really also something that makes sense for democratizing also what are NFTs.
Yeah, I completely agree. And, you know, the most important thing is it kind of to tie it off is to say, you know, especially about this, you know, selecting artists to be in the book. And by doing that, that means that you're deselecting artists or not including artists. You know, the most important thing about this book is it's not that it's right. And I mean that from the perspective of, like, I hope there aren't typos and, like, things like that. But, like, you know, it's like, you know, for a long time, everyone thought that what was written was right to some extent. Like, the point at which it becomes published, it becomes the truth or becomes sort of history. And then, you know, and that's the kind of, like, mystique of publishing, right? But I can tell you that the moment that you stand on the other side, or sit on the other side of a blank book, and maybe you guys have felt this when you published yours, but the moment you sit on the side of a 600-page blank book and you say, I have to fill it, you realize very quickly how chaotic and how kind of fragile history really is. And so, you know, there are people, unfortunately, you know, our production deadline closed 2 days before, you know, Operators Human Unreadable was published. And we managed to get them in, but we couldn't get them in the way that we wanted, for example. And there are lots of moments that it's just, you know, the physical constraints of working got in the way of writing the perfect history. And so this book is not necessarily about being right. The most important thing that comes out of this book is that, for me, books are less about the truth and more about a starting point for debate. You know, this book is huge, but actually its roots and the thinking behind it should be very humble, because what I want to achieve is that someone reads the book and then says, I don't think this is right, or I don't think that is right, or I would have done this differently, or I think about this differently, or I see this with a different perspective, and then says, I'm going to go and commit 2 years of my life to sitting down and writing my response. And I remember, you know, I studied art history at university, and I deeply enjoyed it, and actually I was going to become I had a space at Oxford, and I was going to become an academic, and then I chose to become an artist. And I just remember the feeling of walking down library aisles and looking at these books and seeing, you know, 100 books on a subject matter, and then going through and reading some of them, all of them, and then through all those books, getting an overview of a space. And that is the difference between what you call a history and what you call a canon. You know, a history is one book. A canon is 100 books. And so I want this book to be a starting point for debate. And I would love, the most successful thing that comes out of it is more books that are fundamentally different in their opinions. And so
that totally makes sense.
And
yeah.
So I want to be able to go back to the library shelf and see, you know, on NFTs by Tashin, and then, you know, published in 2024, and then 2025, 26, 27, 28, 29.
What you say reminds me. Yeah, I totally got the idea, you know, and so the canon, it's maybe in 20 years, 30 years, even, you know, maybe one century from now, that we'll have the full canon, and maybe
exactly
this moment. It reminds me actually some of your works related also to Borges, you know, Babylon Library.
Yeah. Well, exactly. There you go, John. You know, it's all the same thing. Like, you know, for the listeners that aren't fully aware, the title for the exhibition at the Muni de Paris was called Babel, and Babel is taken from a story called The Library of Babel. which was written by Borges, Jorge Luis Borges, in 1941. And I would suggest for anyone that is interested in reading, it's a 6-page short story. You can read it in 5 minutes. You can find it online. You can also buy the book. And it is the perfect encapsulation and future premonition of what blockchains are, this idea of an infinite library of knowledge. And also the kind of chaos of history. It is the perfect encapsulation of where we are today. And it was written, I think, 90 years ago. And the show at the Monet de Paris was really just an exploration of that small text. It's a short story. And it was centered all around this idea of the infinite the blockchain is an infinite library of knowledge. This idea of the labyrinth, this idea of history as chaotic and fragile. This idea of encryption and decryption. And as you say, John, you know, this book is my own entry into, you know, the Library of Babel in a way.
Wow, this is beautiful.
And it's you know, I don't see this book as any different to any of the art that I've made. It sits within a similar environment. And you know, it's been a hugely informative process because as someone who's made a lot of art that's centered around this idea of libraries of knowledge and books and history, to then go and write your own book is a really important practice. And you just, you know, in a wider context, like we live in this weird world at the moment, especially when you're thinking about history and writing books, we live in this weird moment where we have AIs that are hallucinating. We have blockchains so on one side you have AIs that are hallucinating. On the other side, you have blockchains that are immutably recording things, right? So you've got this kind of chaotic relationship between this new technology that is changing the nature of truth, and then there's also this new technology that is locking down that truth in a way, in a very permanent way that we've never had before. And then at the same time, on a political basis, we live in this kind of post-truth age where politicians have completely undermined what we would, you know, what we have built as the pillars of truth over the last 200 years, which is this idea of kind of fact. And so we live in this moment, I think, where like history has become very fragile, and also in some ways like revealed to be something that is, you know, written. I know we always, you know, there's always this term, you know, history is written by the winners, and so it's always biased. And you know, this book in many ways is a response to that by saying, no, I want it to be as unbiased as possible because it's been curated by the community, and I want it to reveal my own biases and to have artists in there that I don't like, and artists in there that I wasn't aware of, and that's really important. But ultimately, I think the way that we now need to think about publishing and about books is that these things are almost like they're like arguments that are a starting point for the debate. They are reasons for getting in a room together, you know, with NFT Morning and having a conversation. And that is the importance of them. It is not about telling the truth, because ultimately, like, we will be proved wrong or different, and people will have different opinions, and that's exactly what they should be, you know.
No, totally makes sense. And you know, this is what happened, because since the book has been launched, a lot of debates, a lot of rooms, a lot of people, you know, because this is all okay, you know, actually, you know, we are late and you are late, and so I don't want to take more of your time. But yeah, you know, this is all the point about this movement, you know, because we are pretty early in this movement, you know, that is like 3, 4, 5 years old for most of the people here. And everybody think about future, you know, what we stay, what is history, how to, you know, to be sure in the hand, you know, that the good people do not stay on the side of history or not, or, you know, it's, you have kind of this feeling of yeah, we need to document, we need to create some historical traceability of what happened. Otherwise, nothing will stay. Or otherwise, maybe some other people that don't know the movement, you know, will create some historical of this. You have this feeling about the, I would say, the fight for history.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I think, you know, the other thing that's really important is, like, the book is, it's funny, you create a Taschen book, right? And Taschen has collaborated with, you know, the most important artists in the world, you know, who are the most sophisticated artists in the world. And then you say, okay, let's go and make a book about NFTs. But, like, you know, my perception of NFTs is not about an art history, which is always about the best. I actually think NFTs are a celebration of art at all levels, to all audiences, in all places, so all around the world. And that's really important to just, like, reflect on. There are artists in this book who, it's beyond, you know, it's kind of mad to think that they're in a Taschen book. And that's, like, really important because it underscores this really important part of the NFT space, which is you don't need to have a small group of curators validate your work. You don't need to be selected by a gallery. You don't need to be working with top institutions. You can post your work, find an audience. They don't have to be part of the art world. And you can build a collector group and a community around your work. And it doesn't matter who that is. And so NFTs open up the aperture for who considers themselves an art collector, who considers themselves an art enthusiast, who considers themselves even an artist, right? And so, you know, it's interesting because the book is obviously being, you know, at the moment, the book is being reviewed by, you know, all the major, art critics. So, you know, it was reviewed last week by the Art Newspaper. This week it's being reviewed by the Art Review. You know, people that are more used to reviewing, you know, the 10,000th book on Picasso than they are the first book on NFTs. And so I said, you know, whenever I this review starts happening, sometimes they want to speak to me and sometimes they don't. But I always make it very clear that the metric for judging this book is not necessarily about the quality of the work in there. There is some amazing work in the book. Of course there is. But also it's about telling a history of an art space that is fundamentally egalitarian. And that goes back to this idea of art at all levels, so good, bad, great, masterpiece, and ugly, right?
I totally got the idea. And yeah, it's kind of a great picture of what has been the early movement of this, all these people creating art on the blockchain, basically.
Yeah, because, you know, it's really important to say, like, there has been some amazing art, you know, foundational work that should exist in museums and be hailed as major masterpieces of the 21st century. And that has been produced on the blockchain, there is no doubt. But actually, you know, what are NFTs really for, right? Like, are they really for, like, masterpieces to be made? Personally, I actually don't think so, right? I actually think that, you know, go back to this X Copy Mint yesterday or the day before. I think they are about creating bits of cultural media that open the aperture on who is a collector, that can be distributed as widely as possible. Imagine making a physical traditional print for 1 million people and selling that in 24 hours and delivering in 24 hours the work to everybody in the world. Like, that has never happened before. And it was a small graphic, 3D graphic of a flying bug, right? And that doesn't matter. That's amazing. And so I just think, like, this book is about a celebration of art at all levels. And that's fundamentally important to the NFT space. It's about saying, you know, you have a part to play in this space. You can be part of the NFT community. And it's a very flat cultural landscape. You can be at any level. You can engage in it at any level. And that's great. And actually, you know, when you look at the first chapter of the NFT space, like, who were the first people on the blockchain? They were these kind of artists that were also moonlighting as technologists. They were kind of disillusioned art duos like Hackatal, you know, the first people that minted on Super Rare, you know, Robbie Barrett. You had Hackatal, you had a guy called Poulias, who was a technologist come artist. You had this kind of portrait of this disillusioned art duo, this kind of very young technologist in Robbie Barrett, and then this software developer who was moonlighting an artist called Poulias. And those were the first three mints on Super Rare. And it underscores what NFTs are about, which is this rejection of kind of curation to some extent, or like the kind of elite traditional curation. And then also the celebration of anyone being an artist. You can be a technologist and you can be an artist. You can be a disillusioned art duo from Milan, you can be an artist. You can be someone who's 17 who's working with AI and you can make art. Like, you can just make art if you want to. And if you're good, you'll be found. And if you're not good, you can still build an audience and be successful and be found. And that opens up the aperture of people engaging with art. You know, my last point before I sadly have to go is that, you know, reflecting on art, I've always found, you know, for a long time before I was a full-time artist, I worked in the art world in London and in Hong Kong and in Vancouver. And, you know, I worked all over the art world, including, you know, at major auction houses and galleries and museums and everything. And, you know, I personally have been very fortunate to be able to make work that is collected and has commanded, you know, a reasonably high price point. But, you know, that is kind of the antithesis of what NFTs are truly about. And, you know, we go back to Zets Copy Mint, like $4.99 for a work of art is just amazing. Like, it is amazing. And I think that is hopefully the model, you know, like, music and film are orders of magnitude more popular in the world as works of art. You know, go on to Spotify, go and look at Taylor Swift, and she has billions of views, right? You go and see an art show by one of the most important artists in the world, Damien Hirst, Warhol, Kusama, any of these major artists, there may be 100,000 people that go to that show. And the issue is a couple of things. One, physical art has always been limited in scope because of the physical constraints of production, i.e. you cannot make 1,000, a million, an edition of a million, right? But you can distribute a song or a film to a million people very easily, right? Music and film became digitized much quicker, and therefore it became popularized much quicker. And art has always been bound by the physicality of it. And that's like part of art's unique thing. Like, art is a pilgrimage, unlike music or film to some extent, right? You have to go to see it. You have to associate it with it physically. And that is a fundamentally important part of art. Like, that shouldn't change. But ultimately, art has always been bound because, one, you can only make a certain amount of it, which means it's rare. And if it's rare, supply and demand means it has a lot of value, which means that most people cannot engage with art. And so what NFTs do potentially, and we're starting to see it now with the Pax merge, and then 2 or 3 years later, this moment on floor with Xcopy, you're starting to see the seeds potentially of art escaping the grasp of the physical and moving into a world where you really can see everybody in the world. You know, not just the richest art collector, but their cleaner, their driver, their estate agent, their everybody collecting art. And I think that is fundamentally the transition that's taking place, and something hopefully the book reflects on.
No, it's a huge, yeah, it resonates a lot, you know, what you're saying. And this is what we say here most of, basically every day. You know, at the 20th century, everybody was able easily to say who's his favorite actor or music singer. But it was more complicated to say their favorite artist, because it was something for elite people. And in 10 years from now, you will see people, you know, everybody, young people, old people, anyone, you know, the same way they say, yeah, I love Miley Cyrus or whatever, Britney Spears. They will say, oh, I have this, I love this artist, I love these people, because they will, yeah, interact with art maybe every day.
Exactly. Like, it's, you know, that's, I think that's what, that's the transition that's happening. And maybe this book is like a, you know, is the, a portrait of that first chapter, and as that process happens, people will be more and more interested in the roots of that history, where it all came from, and that is really what the book examines.
This is awesome. No, this is awesome. So just to come back, you know, really just about the how to, you know, to get the book, you know, the best way is just to go on the tashin.com website.
Yeah. So the best way is to, if you are in Hong Kong next week for Art Basel Hong Kong, then DM me on Twitter, RobertAllis_21, and you can I'll add you to the event, which I think is on March 27th. And then if you want to buy the book, you can go on to tashin.com. Yeah, go on to tashin.com. They're selling a number of art editions as well that we commissioned. So work by Rafik Anadol, Sophia Crespo, and Austin Achi. If you just go and have a look at the book, and if it's too expensive, then hold off, because in Q3 of this year, the trade edition will come out. And that will be kind of $30 or $40.
Awesome. I'm watching, you know, the artworks right now, you know, from Rafi Canada, Zinachi, Sofia Crespo. The print edition, right?
Yep. So it's a book, an NFT, and a print. And
there is an NFT also?
There's an NFT as well. So it is, you know, for all those things together, the art editions are very well priced, actually. In my view, I have bought all of them, so yeah.
Okay, this is awesome. Ben, Robert Allis, was really an honor and a pleasure to have you this morning. I wanted to thank you, and yeah, good luck for all the trip, because I think now, you know, it's, yeah, the book has been released, but you still have a big journey to talk about it, I think, at least in 2024. Yeah. So, thank you for this.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, and talk to you very soon. For everybody else listening to the NFT Morning, you know, we will meet again on Monday to talk about, you know, the news of the week. And we will have some Mr. Rabbit that will do the news with us on Monday morning. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Remy. Thank you, Robert. And good morning.
Thank you so much.
Good morning.
Good morning. Exactly. Good morning.
Good morning.
Really happy.